This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I'm John Batchelor. May 1933, the newly inaugurated President Franklin Roosevelt signs the law called the Truth and Securities Act, also known as the Rayburn-Fletcher Securities Bill. Helping us understand the significance of this decision by the nascent New Dealers, Simon Constable, who writes for the Wall Street Journal, Barron's, and other distinguished publications, taking us in a time machine to May 29th, 1933. Simon is in France and watching America's securities law from the distance of the other side of the Atlantic Ocean reminds all of us that these securities laws have made the New York exchanges the most advantageous in the world to offer your public offering because of the transparency and the law keeping. However, this is the beginning of that long saga. 90 years ago, right now. Simon, a very good day to you. I celebrate the New Deal for right away making the right decision about how Wall Street wasn't trusted after the crash, several days of crash, in 1929, and then the bank crisis of early 33, so that Franklin Roosevelt, in March of 33, was sworn in amid a national panic and had to declare a bank holiday to reorganize in some fashion. So the crisis was, while nowhere close to the scale today, then the scale was enormous, and today we just have nascent pieces of it. We do have reason to believe that there's a connection between Wall Street and banks. What did the securities bill achieve 90 years ago today, and how do we compare it to today? Good evening to you, Simon.
Good evening to you, John. This is very interesting. And I didn't know this history until I started reporting on this story, which is in the print edition of the Wall Street Journal. So one of the things before this Securities Act, which we still have now, was put in, was a patchwork quilt of blue sky laws regulated by the states. Now, having a uniform Securities Act for the whole country made a lot more sense. So that seems obvious, but there were other flaws in it. Like if you were a local bank, you might complain about a local company going to market with their securities because that would look like competition. And this was a period where you had single unit banks. So you have one branch in a town and they might complain to the governor. And so your company wouldn't go public. And so that was a bit of a flaw with it. This got rid of all of that because it was just go straight to Wall Street and get your IPO done, and you get an influx of capital. And it really did help. And also, so did all the transparency.
The first day return is a fascinating detail. Explain, Simon, what was then in the 1920s for the first day return of a company going public, and what is today?
Well, this is very interesting. Let's first start with the goal of going to market for an IPO, an initial public offering, is to raise capital for your company. So ideally, you want to raise as much capital as you need, if not a little bit more. So getting a lot is best. So when you have a first day pop, i.e. the trading, you have the trading price at the end of the first day and how much that was different from the price it was priced at. And so on average in the 1920s, you saw a first day pop in prices of about 8.2%, which sounds a lot until you look at the period from 2001 to 2020, when the average, this is the average, was 18.6% first day pop. And that means the companies trying to raise capital were getting a near 20% undervaluation. That's really bad for the company. They should have had that 20%. Instead, it went into the pockets of speculators and bankers, which is fine. It eventually comes back to the economy, but it doesn't help the company in question who raised the money. And there's the flaw, is that the data dump that companies are required to do now on before they go public is so huge, and the government is so prickly about misrepresentation that they give you a lot of paper and a lot of written stuff, but does it mean a heck of a lot? Possibly not.
So the difference today is pocketed by the bankers who offer the IPO. That's who's making the money, not the company itself.
Not the company itself. Some of it will be investors who've, right, who've bought at that price, but some of it will go to the bankers because the bankers will get an allotment. So the bank who does it will get part of that allotment. Very interesting. It's the way it is, but I'd rather go public if I had a company and have no movement. And that would mean it was priced perfectly right. I would have got the amount of money I could have got for the company. The company could use that capital to grow itself and then pay dividends over many, many years to investors. That I think will be a more efficient situation. I don't know if the bankers will be very happy with that.
Returning to the 21st century, we have news about the markets. The news is about inflation, core inflation, inflation for the consumer. And the market interpretation is that it's positive. The puzzle is, What is Mr. Powell and the Federal Reserve going to make of this number? Your opinion, Simon. To say that it moderated slightly is an understatement. 0.1% was all we had of a decline. Is this positive news for the American economy, in your opinion?
I don't think this on its own is positive news. It is the right direction, but it's you have to measure it with a micrometer. So yes, it went down. I think it will mean that we'll probably get another rate hike sooner or later from the Federal Reserve, which will make the cost of borrowing even more expensive. That won't be good. There is an indicator that I don't think the Federal Reserve looks at very carefully, which is the producer price index, which is basically wholesale prices. It is dropping like a stone. It is typically a leading indicator of consumer prices, and it was a leading indicator going into this inflationary surge, and it will be a leading indicator coming out of it. And it's now falling like a stone. It's a very steep curve downwards. And I think the Fed should look at that. I don't know if they will. And if they did and believe what I believe, then they wouldn't raise rates again. And I think it will still keep falling. But neither way is good.
I'm struck by how the identification, this is Bloomberg reporting, identification of where the inflation is. It's not in food and gas because we take that out of the formula. It's in services, airline tickets, hotel rooms, and services all generated higher demand because the job market is too tight. I never thought we'd come to a place where we're worried about too many people working, but that is the concern in Washington right now. That's a political concern as well as an economic concern. I see no evidence that Americans are backing off getting new jobs. You saw that strong number that we just had, Simon. So
Yes, indeed. It is a very strange situation where you'd think people having jobs and money in their pocket and spending it was a good thing. That is what America has long been about. You know, the right to pursue one's own dreams. And people are doing it, and that's great. And yet that seems to be a problem. And you're right, it is political in large part and significantly part of the economic situation too.
To France, Occitane. Simon is in paradise in the south of France, but we've been following the French story through Simon's reporting for weeks now. I saw no major confrontations in large or small cities over the controversy over raising the retirement age. However, you did bring my attention to the gendarmes, the police who have been on the front lines of these protests. What's happening?
This is really interesting. Retaining the gendarmes in the gendarmeries is becoming increasingly hard. Offering more money isn't helping. They're retiring in droves and going to become municipal police force, police women, police men, where maybe they can be in a rural town where you don't tend to get riots and stuff like that. I think it's a lifestyle choice, and who can blame them? No one wants to be having to face rioters every day. Not that we've had that lately, but that is one of the jobs that the gendarmes have to deal with. That is a big problem, getting people to come in and join up, and I think that that's going to be a continued problem for the entire French government and the police service here. I don't know how they're going to recruit if money won't attract people. And there are people without jobs here who might be very good gendarmes. But if it's that stressful that people are just quitting regardless of the money, that's not a good sign.
Finally, Simon, 30 seconds. Your impression of the coronation of King Charles III. Were you pleased at the way it was conducted? 30 seconds.
Absolutely pleased. It does bring Britain together. It reminds us that Britain is a community of many people of many different backgrounds, races, cultures, and King Charles. I keep wanting to call him Prince Charles because that's what he was most of my life. But he's bringing everyone together and saying, "Look, we're a community. This is important. It's good to be British. It's not bad to be from somewhere else, but it is a good thing to be British. We're all together." And I think it's fantastic for the country, and it's much needed right now amongst this awful chaos.
Simon Constable, Barron's, Wall Street Journal, other distinguished publications. I'm John Nash.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Chances are you've been to the doctor recently, and you probably handed over your insurance, your ID, and even your social security number. Your doctor is just one of many places that has your personal info. And if any of them accidentally expose your details, you could be at risk for identity theft. LifeLock monitors millions of data points a second. If you become a victim, they'll fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART, or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.